Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators. Coming to you live this Monday morning. Apologize, we had some technical difficulties on Sunday. Was unable to drop a show following the Gators 34-17 loss in College Station, which I don't think comes to a surprise to many. But we are members of the Stadium and Gale Network and brought to you by our partners at Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA in Lake City, Florida is a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. So thank you to Guy Norris and his team for sponsoring us. And let's just get right into it, fellas. This is basically deja vu all over again with the LSU-Miami games that we saw in September. Offense goes down, scores right out of the gates. The defense keeps us in the game despite a slow start. Sam, I can see your ChatGPT sad Gator in College Station. What were your thoughts of the game and how everything kind of unraveled?
Yeah, just another deflating, uninspiring watch as a fan. It is frustrating when you're really only down 7 to 10 points the whole game and you just know that there's really no chance. This one felt a little bit different from the LSU-Miami games. Like, it still kind of felt like there was a chance there, but just with A&M, the environment, like, I really just did not feel like we ever had the opportunity to, you know, win that game, even when opening drive touchdown, and then we give up 14 unanswered. It was another great script to drive, you know, we're really cooking, two games in a row, opening drive touchdowns, but yeah, it's just getting another annoying watch, and it's at the point where you can kind of, you know, if you're at a social function, kind of check out, you know, have some conversations, and you don't have to live and die with every play as a Gator fan right now, and that's a very depressing and sad reality.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference was the offense was alive in the early going. We looked confident. I think we were probably ran eight plays, go 75 yards at opening drive, throwing the ball downfield, something we have not seen. We saw a little bit in the Texas game, but really attacking early. Dev, is that more the frustrating part, that our offense showed life, our defense stagnant out of the gates, and then, you know, back to Billy Napier football the last three quarters?
Yeah, there were some shades of Doug Nussmeier scripted drives there early in the game. We had 2024 DJ came to play a little bit. We had the beautiful scripted drives. Like you said, kind of started fast on offense, which was a nice change of pace. I think at one point I said to my dad and one of my buddies that were over, if we're going to lose a game, I would rather lose a game where you're actually competent and fun to watch on offense. But yeah, I think the biggest thing, like, once the game got, you settled into the football game, it turned into Miami and LSU all over again. Not LSU as much in the sense that we weren't turning the ball over constantly like we were in the LSU game, but just it was like A&M made that adjustment, and they didn't put Dallas Wilson on islands with Desmond Ricks. And as soon as they stopped putting guys man-to-man on islands with our freshman receivers, we just didn't have a counterpunch to that. And it's kind of the same thing over and over again that we see with this coaching staff, that yes, maybe they can draw up a scripted drive. They can, you know, do everything leading up to Saturday from a preparation standpoint. But when it comes to being ready to play, when it comes to making the adjustments that you have to have in game, the feel for the game, the staff just doesn't have it. And it's not even that they don't have it. They actively cost us games with the things that they do. We'll get into the fourth and six, like, predetermined going for it play later. But there was a point where we had a third and four, key third and four of the game. And I suppose the offensive staff had decided that it was a Kanan Daniels drive. So we call a timeout, come back out, and we have Kanan Daniels pass protecting on third and four, key play in a game on the road. He misses his block. DJ gets sacked. And it's just things like that you just – you don't have a feel. Why do you have your true sophomore running back that hasn't been asked to pass protect all season, all his entire career, much less all season, on the field for that particular moment? It's a feel thing. It's something that that we've seen constantly for 4 years. We're not close. We're not, you know, dangerous, because the guy on the sidelines doesn't know what he's doing. And it just comes down to that. He's the worst coach maybe in the history of Florida football. Let me credit Neil Blackman for this tweet that he sent out here today. This is the benefit of being here on a Sunday evening instead of a Sunday morning. Florida is 21-23 under Billy Napier, obviously the worst Gators coach through 44 games since Tom Leib from 1940 to 1945. That would be during World War II. Every team every year has to go through some sort of adversity. Some years that adversity is your entire roster going over to Europe to fight Nazis. Other years, the adversity that your team has is they have to deal with Billy Napier calling plays for them. So that's what we're dealing with this coaching staff. It's thankfully close to being over, hopefully. So that was my takeaway from last night. Not much good to take away from it. Another embarrassing night for the program.
Will, what'd you get out of that game? Was it the play calling or the execution for the offensive line? I think this is our third. I think Austin Barber graded as a 0.0 in pass protection. Our third offensive lineman this year to grade a 0 in pass protection. Obviously, that's going to impact Lagway and his progressions. Is it more the play calling, or is it just execution by and Cassius Howell just wrecking havoc on the right end of the offensive line?
Well, I'm sure it's a little bit of both. I think that it really what this game outlined is that it's kind of been what Billy Napier has been all through his 4 years. He is going to run a system. He's going to call his plays, and he's going to stick to them no matter what. I mean, Cassius Howell was just dominating Austin Barber all game, and they even had another guy who was also dominating Austin Barber all game. And I don't even know if Billy has anything in the playbook that, you know, calls for the running back to chip the D end or anything like that, because we just constantly let Cassius Howell just tear Barber up. And poor DJ, I mean, he played pretty well that first quarter. He looked like he had come really ready to play. And he's just – this entire second half, he was getting hit in this blind side almost once a drive. I think he had two fumbles there. I mean, it was clear that Billy Napier doesn't have the play-calling creativity to scheme around that. You know, he would call these long screen plays, you know, second and 12 screen, third and 12 screen. He even called one there on the final drive where we threw a screen to Vernell down 17 points as the clock was running out, which was pretty fitting, and also fitting that, you know, we throw one to Vernell and he fumbles on it. But it's like, you know, he thinks that, you know, the way you deal with a tough front seven from you know, the likes of Texas A&M is you throw screen passes, which, you know, sometimes it works, but when it's clear that it didn't work the first five times, you got to find something else to try to move the ball down the field. And, you know, once they went into sort of a cover two, cover three scheme where they weren't just playing press man on our stud wide receivers, it was over. And, you know, after, you know, we scored on the first drive, punted the second, scored on the third. And once the scripted drives were done, we had 3 points, despite the defense settling in and once again giving us a chance to win the game, making a key turnover when we had to have it, and, you know, getting the offense in position where one touchdown, all you need is one touchdown, and you could potentially really get things pretty tight, make the home favorite feel kind of nervous, and we couldn't do it. We're not going to be able to do it probably at all this year. It's just more of the same with Billy Napier. It's kind of what we've come to expect.
Yeah, and Hunter, I think we discussed last week with Edgar on the show in Breakfast Bites. We didn't really see the defense allowing 30. I think Sam had 31-17. You're almost spot on with the score prediction, Sam. What'd you see defensively out of the gates? I think they were averaging 19.5 plays their first two or three drives. They didn't have a single play for negative yardage, which it felt like the Gators, after our scripted drives, was happening every other play. What'd you see from – it looked like the back end of the defense was – really our Achilles heel last night, or Saturday night.
Yeah. I mean, the first few drives there on defense, it felt like I was playing my buddy that plays NCAA five nights a week. It felt like they were never not going to score, right? But credit to the defense because they adapted, especially on the back end early. There was some safety play that was tough to watch. You know, especially I think number 14 appeared on my timeline like 30 tweets in a row after a couple of those plays. But credit to them because they adapted and they gave us a chance, many chances, especially that second half to to come back, and you know, we obviously weren't able to. But yeah, it was definitely not what I expected out of the gates. We talked about, I think, with Edgar, with this defense being elite, that we wouldn't see games like that. And so it was a little shocking to see it first. But it really just all comes down, and they all touched on it, but Billy's failure to adapt during a game, whereas you see the defense adapt there and Ron Roberts for the better, he's not able to do that. And it was so obvious watching a game like that. I was talking with Devin last year against Tennessee, different style game, obviously, but similar in the fact that when you watch a game, you can see the talent on the field and you can see the guys doing everything that they're being coached to do. And yeah, there's mistakes. Obviously, every player makes mistakes. It's so obvious, though, that it's the coaching holding them back. It's so obvious. And I think that's what's frustrating for everyone when it's so tangibly the coaching that's holding you back. It's time to move on. It's time for a fresh start. It's just so frustrating to watch this man coach football games. He cannot adapt.
We're hiring again.
Not yet. As we'll get into this later, but some serious football programs are open in the market right now with some recent firings, thanks to Pete Thamel. But let's get into, Coach Napier always talks about accountability. I think that's something he harps on after every game, every loss, it feels like, and every Monday presser. I have not had the chance. I was in Vermont for a bachelor party, so I did not listen to the Billy Napier post-game show. Will, I don't think you have either.
Yeah. Have not had the chance to yet.
Yeah, but I think Dev's got some responses from old Billy that we'll get your live reaction now on what he had to say following yet again another loss in league play.
Yeah, luckily for Jackson and Will, Hunter and I took the time to listen to Billy's post-game presser so you guys don't have to.
Some got to go to war and some got to listen to Billy Napier, right?
Dev? Exactly. If that's the cross we have to bear, that's the cross we have to bear. So Napier last night after the football game was asked, what would he say to the fans about his current 2-4 record this season and his 21-23 overall record? To which he responded, I think we've played some of the better teams in the country and our teams have been in the game and our kids are battling their asses off.
He went from spot the ball to talk about how hard that schedule is real quick. I mean, we are fans and we have played, a bunch of top. They were showing a graphic last night. It was like a bunch of top five teams in a row. First time, I think, ever. But it's really no excuse. Like, the reason Florida's schedule is so hard is because Florida is so poor. Like, if you go look at all the team composite rankings and everything, like, we have a top 10 team just coached by a bonehead who is like, I mean, if you pick, I think it's called Pick Six Previews, is one of my favorite preseason thing magazine deals. And I went against his sort of, preview for the season whenever I picked Billy to go 12-0. But Billy Napier is graded as like one of the worst game day coaches there in the Power Five and in the G5 in there. And the reason in his preview, he lays it all out. The reason that he has Florida's record where it is because of Napier on game day and what his game day grader coach score is. And so Billy's right, spot the lie. We have played a bunch of top five teams in a row. He's lost all of them except for one in the swamp, which I guess I'm glad we won that game. But I wonder what he thinks our record should be deep down. Like, does he think these losses are acceptable? Because it's starting to kind of feel that way.
When it comes down to it, losers lose. And 4 years in, he's a loser. And that, it's just, there's no other way to put it than that, I don't think. And yeah. Before the season and the season preview, I said that we had a 6-6 coach and a 12-0 quarterback. Well, when your 12-0 quarterback starts the season hurt and your coach pretends those first four games are preseason games and that they don't actually count, you wind up 2-4 and your coach, it's still a 6-6 coach, maybe even a little worse than that. And then the combo where you have a 6-6 coach and your quarterback's not healthy, that's how you end up 2-4 halfway through the season. So it's brutal. Hunter, what else did old Billy have to say to make the fans feel better after the game last night?
Yeah, this one made us all feel real warm and fuzzy. This actually goes to Will's question on you wonder what Billy in his head thinks our record should be. Well, this may give you a little bit of an indication. There's no quick fix here. The best thing to do here is win. We saw that last week. In general, we have to stay the course here. We're close. So Billy thinks we're close. Billy thinks it's no quick fix. It's year four, by the way.
Well, he is right that there is no quick fix. Like, to fully buy him out, it's going to take an upfront payment of a bunch of money. And then, you know, I think he gets a bunch more over, you know, every 6 months or something like that. So that's going to take time for us to officially close our end of the deal. We are decently close. You can see it. I mean, every single loss has had the team in position to win the game. LSU, USF, Miami, and again with Texas A&M, one score games right there for the taking. All you have to have is any sort of pulse on offense. But our head coach / play caller / offensive coordinator / game day manager / head recruiting coordinator can't figure it out. We can't score any points. It's not even that we can't score any points. We can't even threaten them. Like, it is truly crazy. Like, I think I was talking about the way Auburn was calling the Oklahoma game there. And, you know, they ended up losing the game, but they put pressure on Oklahoma by at least throwing deep shots. And I know that they were sitting in cover two, Texas A&M was, and stuff like that. But you got to find ways to scheme your stud wide receivers open so that they can put some pressure on the defense. Because, you know, what if you get the ball to Dallas Wilson and he makes a freaky athletic play, and all of a sudden it's 24-24 and the Gators are going nuts and the defense has been playing well and Texas A&M starts tightening up. And he can't do that. You know, it's just the play calling in crucial situations is so predictable that, yeah, like, he's right, we're close. But we've never been over the hump with him. And, like, what I think Devin said on Breakfast Fights, he's like been over 500 like for two games total in his entire career. And it was like in the middle of the second year before he went on this historic losing streak to like the likes of Arkansas and whatnot.
The most damning stat of all of them is 0-14 on the road against ranked opponents.
Yeah,
that's Vanderbilt numbers, old Vanderbilt numbers. That's worst program in the SEC type numbers to not even be able to fluke your way into a road win against a ranked team.
Yeah.
I know that the going on the road in the SEC is tough, but we're 4 years in. He is never going to beat in 4 years a ranked team on the road. That's unbelievable.
It's insane.
I will shout out to Colin Klein for, you know, dialing up a play call, 22-yard touchdown pass and cover four. So somehow they got guys running open. When we drop seven in coverage, so
yeah. I mean, what if they
just don't run them?
Yeah. What if a defender falls or something? You know, what if he commits a pass interference and all of a sudden we get a 15-yard penalty and we really start rolling? What if it opens up lines for Jaden Baugh to run whenever we've got, you know, they can't play stack the box? It's just he's so clueless when it comes to play calling, and it really is such a shame that he continues to think that he should be a offensive coordinator and play caller of this team, because it's so clear to the most, you know, average layperson watching the game what the problem is.
They're not the most shining beacon of success as a program over the last 6 years, but FSU's basically made an entire offense off of like just throwing up 50-50 balls to talented receivers, which yeah. I don't want to be in their shoes either. But it is kind of nice when you watch them occasionally that you're just like, oh, they're just going to heave a ball up. Maybe they get a pass interference. Maybe they throw an interception. Maybe they have, you know, their one good receiver make a play. Like that's what you like to see, you know, DJ do for Dallas Wilson or whatever. And you know, you saw it early in the game and we had some success doing it. And it makes you wonder why they don't do it a little bit more often. You know, not the Twitter fan sitting on the couch calling for the shot every single play, but it's something to loosen up a defense and to make it look like we kind of want to score on occasion would be nice.
Going back to Hunter's quick fix, it just comes down that I think Napier is just a liar. We're seeing quick fixes with Mike Elko, third game ever at Texas A&M, comes in the swamp and just beats the tar out of us. Year two, he's got his team. I believe after Sunday's rankings, they're now number four in the country, undefeated. It's really revamped that offensive line. That defense is incredible. I believe they've allowed two of the last 34 third downs as conversions. So Yeah, there is quick fixes in today's portal. And if you being a good coach, Kurt Cignetti, 2 years at Indiana, just went on the road and beat Dan Lanning by double digits. So,
see, but the problem with all of those things is that it's like that goes to like roster management. There's like really not a single problem with this roster. It all comes down to the play calling on game days, the game day management with timeouts and things like that. Like we have a roster that can compete with every single top five team in the country right now.
We've played four top 10 teams in six games. We've looked like we belonged on the field in every single one of them.
Yeah.
Like 185 on the roster, we're totally fine. It's the 500 staff members on the sideline versus the 40 staff members on the other sideline where we're at the biggest disadvantage every single week.
And that's what tells me that he's got blinders on is, you know, when he's in a press conference and he's asked like what the problem is and he's saying that, you know, there's no quick fix, we're close. Like we are. That's the whole problem. We're close and you're the one who's blowing it every single weekend. And so
you're right. Jackson's saying he's a liar. He is a liar. In his head he knows that the roster's there.
No, I don't think he knows it.
Okay. Well,
even if no, I think like, this is the process to him.
Yeah,
because it is a quick fix, right? You get the right coach in next year, it could be a quick fix. There's a lot of talent on this roster.
The quick fix is getting you the hell out of town and bringing in somebody else like Lane Kiffin that can have a quick fix and put us in the playoff in year one. That's the fix. So
it is.
But we'll get into the now hiring season momentarily, but let's jump into our first caller. We got Jake from New Orleans.
Hey guys, Jake calling from New Orleans. I want to get y'all's thoughts on that fourth down decision to go for it. You know, easy to be an armchair quarterback and say that was the wrong play, but would love to hear you guys talk about it. Thanks, as always. Go Gators.
Yeah, thanks, Jake from New Orleans, for giving us a call. Sam, I believe Neil Blackman tweeted out that the analytics say punt there. I believe the success rate was roughly around 30%, somewhere in that ballpark. The drive before, we had third and eight, and we ran a draw to get fourth and two, and we ended up kicking the field goal. We're at midfield down a touchdown. What's going through your mind in that sequence of events?
Yeah, to your point about Neil's tweet, I thought Billy's whole thing was analytics. So, like you said, liar. Yeah, at that point in the game, like I respect him, like maybe figuring out like, man, we got to get something going. But you would think you would try maybe a better call on third down to set up, you know, a more fourth and manageable, not a fourth and six when half of your passing schemes consist of 4 yard hitch routes and, you know, you don't have that play. So, yeah, should have just punted it because, you know, your defense was continuing to keep you in the game. I'm not crazy about our punter either, so like maybe that plays effect into it. Can he cough and corner him, pin him deep, and kind of make a playmaker? Yeah. I forget what we call our special teams players, but yeah, like you said, Billy, as an analytical guy, went against the analytics. So that just goes against everything he is supposed to stand for.
You know, scared money don't make money, but it feels like every time we got third and manageable, you know, the setup of fourth down, he's scared as hell. Back-to-back drives running an HB draw.
Terrified.
Doesn't realize he can, you know, complete a pass on third down to move the change. Let's instead have a set up a fourth and medium or fourth and short and try to dial something up. Hunter, what were your thoughts and overall feel just in those big moments that we've seen throughout the first, you know, 44 games of his tenure?
Yeah, especially on those couple of drives we're talking about, it's just for a guy that says he's so process oriented, it made no sense, right? Because you have the third and eight that he runs into kicking. Usually, if you're running on a third and medium or third and long in those scenarios, it's the setup going for a fourth down. He does it, he gets 6 yards, fourth and two, and he kicks a field goal. Okay, all right, comes back to it later, two drives later, right? Third and six, he runs it again, nothing. Now we're going to go for it again if we don't get anything instead of punting, right? And so just the process is all over the place. And it really, like you said, it goes back to the guy just being scared and not understanding or having a feel for the moment. It made no sense. It was baffling. I think it was baffling to anybody that was watching.
Hunter and Dev and Will, we discussed texting throughout the game. I believe Napier ran screens on second and 12 and then third and 12. does the HB draws, you know, they're not expecting back-to-back screen plays from behind the line of scrimmage, right? Is that kind of the same formula he's taking on third and medium, third and long? It's like, there's no way in hell they expect back-to-back draw plays. And,
we're getting galaxy brain Billy Napier'd. It's so the thing, you know, Hunter hit the nail on the head. It's no feel, because you go from being insanely conservative on all of these, you know, second and third and long distances. We're going to run draws. We're going to protect the ball. We're going to protect the field position, all this stuff. And then just the most recklessly aggressive, anti-analytical, like out of nowhere with 13 minutes left in the game, all of a sudden we're like declaring that this is going to be the game right here, down seven at midfield. It makes no, and then immediately, of course, you know, when the offense decides we're going to be extra aggressive and we're going to try to put our stamp and go and take this game, and it doesn't work, the defense gives up an 8-minute drive. And it's just so typical. Like, you know, usually your defense rallies around the aggressiveness of the offense, and, you know, they start feeding off of one another. And then it's bend but don't break for 8 minutes until they score and they go up two scores, and that's the ball game. There's 3 minutes left or whatever. So it's so typical with no feel, super conservative, super aggressive, and just it's terrible. It's just terrible.
I disagreed with it. I didn't think he should that he should have gone for it there. He seems to, Dan Mullen used to always have his third and long to get you into fourth and manageable play, and it was the old quarterback draw. Billy calls the halfback dive every single time we have third and about 10 if he wants to go for it on fourth down. He did it on the previous drive right before this one, and it got stuffed. And then he did it again on this one, and then went for it on fourth and six. But I think he should have punted in that situation. Fourth and six, you've struggled offensively all game. And it seemed like, you know, kind of like Devin said, that you made it, you declared that the game was going to, you know, be won or lost right there on that one play when you could have punted. Defense had been playing really well, get them backed up. And you know, force a three and out or give up one first down and then make them punt, or even two first downs and make them punt. You probably have the ball in like the 35 somewhere. You got decent field position again, and you can put a little pressure on them. And instead, you kind of just sucked any momentum that you had all out of the stadium. And Texas A&M, like, credit to them, they just absolutely ran us over. I don't think they threw a single pass. Elko, I think, is a brilliant guy. You know, he kind of looks like this sort of meathead offensive defensive lineman, but the guy graduated from Penn. He's a brilliant dude. He was dialing that drive up so that they ran the clock out and that they gave us no opportunities. And I think the reason he knew that is because he knew that if we started having to go down the field, that DJ and Vernell and Dallas Wilson could make some plays. And he didn't want to be in a situation where, you know, we were essentially forced to throw the ball downfield. But I just thought it was kind of a reckless decision, honestly. It was like, why make the game over right there? And, even if it had worked, I think I would still be sitting here saying that was the dumbest decision ever. And it shows that he really doesn't have a feel for how to manage things. Like, usually, you know, when you're going into four down territory, you know that, and the defense doesn't. And so you can call the drive so that you can set yourself up even on first down. You don't have to, make it so that it's a two down game. But, you know, that's the Billy Napier experience. You know, just when he's predictable, he becomes the most reckless fourth down riverboat gambler on the planet.
And it was that he predetermined, too, that he was – Yeah. No matter what happened on third down, he was going for it on fourth.
Yeah,
down,
it probably could have been. We could have gotten, like, you know, a tackle for loss, and it would have been like third and 11. And
we basically did. I mean, it was third and five, and then we went for it on fourth and six. I think, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying it could have, like, been a catastrophic, like, fourth and 11, and he probably still wouldn't have wanted it because he had made up his mind. It's like, you know, sort of how he does the running back rotations, where it was like, this time we're going for it, boys. Let's get in here and let's execute.
Well, even going back to last year when it ended up working out, because I think DJ led a touchdown drive, but his first drive in the Tennessee game in Neyland Stadium on the road last year, he's on his own like 5-yard line right in front of Tennessee student section, only because Billy predetermined no matter what, no matter how Graham Mertz was playing, DJ's getting the third drive.
Yeah.
It's just no feel. Like,
Yeah, if Graham hadn't gotten hurt last year, I think we talked about this, but if he hadn't gotten hurt last year, we would have done the two for Graham, one for DJ for literally the entire season. And I don't think quarterbacks are really made like that anymore. Like DJ clearly looks like he's a guy that's got to get into a rhythm, and once he does, he can really sling it. But that's just who Billy Napier is, and that's why we're now hiring.
Even the A&M game last year, not to harp on like all of the dumb things Billy's done over the last 4 years, but I think it was a DJ drive against Texas A&M last year where Graham had like put together a couple drives. I think it was a 10-point game with like 8 minutes left, and DJ goes running out there and throws an interception on the first play. So any chance that we make it into a one possession game with a little bit of time left to like actually have a chance to win the game was gone, evaporated, because Billy had predetermined that this was the plan going in. This was the plan we were going to stick to, no matter how many times you have to run your head directly into a brick wall and do this to the point where you lose the game.
That's the black flag mentality. The black flag mentality is you go down with the ship.
It's a process or a deal.
Well, fortunately for some folks in attendance, they were escorted out of the premises of the stadium. And we're a longtime followers of the Texas A&M Police Department, a Twitter account. They are fantastic. Fortunately, we were monitoring that a little bit harder yesterday as the Gators were in College Station. Sam, I know you're sending us some tweets. What were some of the best ones from some of those fans that were limited in watching Billy Napier Saturday night?
Yeah, one of the great joys of college football Twitter is the Texas A&M Police account. I know we've all been aware of it for years, but those who haven't, check it out. It's really great stuff. These are all going to be from once the game had already kicked off. So first one, just real light, but MIP, neat. Natural light beer in pocket. Citation issued, ejected. Next one, we got MIP, neat. Three natural light beers and one twisted tea in pockets. Citation issued, ejected.
Love the versatility.
Here's a really good one. Public intoxication, Aggie Park. Contacted subject eating a sandwich with a water jug of whiskey. BAC with 0.337, released to EMS. Absolute sicko.
We need to help out there. We need a quote tweet by the police department on that this guy's even still alive.
We needed to know if he was a Gator or an Aggie, because it very well a whiskey jug of whiskey that very well could be, you know, the medicine for watching Billy Napier.
At least he was mixing in a sandwich, right?
Yeah,
right. You got to mix it in, and then just a few more. Public intoxication, section 332, release a sober friend, ejected. Vaping, seat, ejected. That's about all I got. Just a real great joy. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, you don't really have to kind of live and die by every play the Gators are playing. You can kind of find some fun in some other things. So I encourage everyone the next time the Aggies have a game at a Kyle Field, check out that Twitter account.
I'm astounded we didn't find any tweets released a sober wife. That's always the worst one when a guy is publicly intoxicated and gets ejected and released to his sober wife. So. At least a few of those people cut it between the lines.
The one from last week, I just found it. Public intoxication times two, responded to report of intoxicated subject in men's restroom, called sober friend arrived intoxicated, both arrested. Great stuff coming from that account on a weekly basis.
So you guys give that a follow. Anything else to harp on with A&M? It's the same old circus with Billy Napier. We try to wake up Sunday morning. I know we are getting texts all night and all Sunday morning. You know, is it going to happen? The DMs are going crazy, all the group chats. And no, nothing has happened as of 9:55 p.m. on Sunday night as we're watching the Chiefs and the Lions. But there were some big news in college football. You know, Virginia Tech's already fired their coach, UCLA, Oklahoma State, obviously no school that we will compete with in terms of a coaching hire. None of their.
That's what you think. Scott Strickland might have other ideas.
That's a good point. Good point. Maybe I should be concerned. Our coaching pool looks just like theirs. But one that might come into play is Penn State, after three straight losses, getting embarrassed, crumbling late against Oregon. I believe UCLA, winless UCLA, dominated them, and then they lose at home to 22-21 in Northwestern. James Franklin out the door, $49 million buyout. I think, Dev, you stated Billy's got to go like 84-22 his next 106 games to match James Franklin's record.
Yeah, 83-22 just to match James Franklin. Some athletic programs are serious and some aren't. And unfortunately, it appears that we fall on the unserious program side of things for now. Good on Penn State, I mean, maybe they jumped the gun a little bit with UCLA kind of starting to figure it out with old Jerry Neuheisel, but they won their second straight game this week too. But good on Penn State. I mean, their athletic director said, you know what, this isn't acceptable. We were the preseason number two team in the country. We had all these guys coming back. We've just lost three straight games. This was the best team that James Franklin had on paper since he's been here. He's been here for 12 years. And they said enough is enough. So good on them, because it makes me jealous. We've been looking at the same thing for 4 years now. And it makes me jealous. It makes me jealous.
Yeah. Well, Hunter, I'll kick it to you. Does that change Florida's timeline? Obviously, no news Sunday with Napier's future, but all the excuses now go out the window, whether it's the four games for the freshmen, so they can't hold out and transfer. The whole, we don't really have an interim coach on staff. Well, that's due to Billy's inability to hire a competent staff. Now all of that is out the window. What do you think changes timeline-wise for the Gators?
I would like to think it changes something. It kind of, increases the urgency a little bit. They see a move like that, maybe one that a lot of people were not expecting, and it speeds up the process a little bit. But it goes back to what Dev said. Some people have serious athletic departments and some people don't. And we haven't really been given a reason to believe that Scott Strickland, has that edge to him, like a Penn State athletic director, to realize it's not working and move on. And in this situation, right, why you see so many people surprised on the Franklin side is obviously because of what he's done. Last year they were in the semifinals, and now he's gone, a handful of games, and then we're halfway through October. I mean, that's a crazy surprise to many. What it is, like Dev said, it is an athletic director taking a look at his program and seeing a guy that can win a lot of games, can get you in the playoffs, but it's obvious that he can't get them over that hump. And so instead of waiting 2 to 3 years for it to spiral and for the bottom to fall out, he recognized it early enough. So now Penn State will be happy they did that in a year or two. And so I don't have the confidence that our athletic director has that in him. Luckily, we're not in that same situation where Billy's done such a poor job that I would hope you get to five losses and he's gone regardless. And so from a timeline standpoint, I don't think it will speed anything up as much as I hope it would.
Penn State's statement was, we hold our athletics program to the highest of standards, and we believe this is the right moment for new leadership at the helm of our football program to advance us towards Big Ten and national championships. Good on you, man. Good on you. Because if you're Scott Strickland watching our football program right now, there is nothing about what we've watched the last 4 years that says that we're serious about winning SEC or national championships. So it's a move that I commend. I take my hat off to them for having the courage to do it when they realize that it's time to do it.
Yeah, and I think you can kind of relate it to us last year, not to go in there and make it about the Gators, but they are avoiding the potential chance for Franklin to go on a win streak and keep his job, and then the same thing happens to them next year. And that is exactly what we're dealing with. And to the timeline point, I do think fifth loss, just get it over with. I know we were all hoping for the tweet this morning, but we also know like it's unrealistic, which stinks, but I think with Penn State, good on them, rip the Band-Aid off. And I'm not like concerned about like them getting ahead of the curve, but it is clear to like send that message as a program, as an athletic director, and that will go a long way. And we are simply just begging for a message to be sent.
I will say, I think it's time for me to recreate a Facebook profile and join some Gator fan pages, because I was on a plane this morning and a guy was mentioning the Gator game Saturday night. And I said, yeah, well, we're kind of hoping we lose now. You know, let's just finally cut ties. And he's obviously living in some sort of alternate reality of Facebook, because he told me Dabo Swinney had gotten fired. And this is at like 9 a.m. Sunday morning. And obviously, as we all know, they won by like 40 over Boston College Saturday afternoon. So maybe if I was just on Facebook, I could see Billy Napier got fired and just live in this alternate reality and tell everyone he got fired and just live my life peacefully until it actually happens. But Will, what are your thoughts? You know, Arkansas fired their coach. Auburn probably going to be in the same scenario. They're just as inept as we are offensively. They got a good defense and they can't move the ball, so we're probably going to compete with them as well. You've been on the, I think you have some bets in this podcast. would be on the sidelines in 2026, or you owe some people some funds, but
yeah, a couple beers here and there. That I don't think it speeds up our timeline at all. I don't think Scott Strickland looks at it that way. I mean, you know, these things would happen like with Mike White in basketball, and he was totally unaffected by it. Like I don't think he wants to fire Billy Napier. And so he's going to hope that Billy Napier wins against Mississippi State. And like, you know, I think we're like 10 and a half point favorites or something. So like chances are we're going to beat Mississippi State at home, and then you're not going to fire him after a win as much as we'd all like it. Devin, I know Devin thinks that the team is going to quit. I just don't see it happening. But, you know, I think that he doesn't want to fire Billy Napier. And so that's why he's still the coach. And, you know, this was new leadership in Penn State. I think that their athletic director, who had hired James Franklin, had left like within the last couple years. And I think they got this guy from Temple in. And so I'm hoping that they will hire Matt Rhule, because I would not like them to get in on the Cignetti sweepstakes, because even if it doesn't affect the timeline, you know, competition drives the price up. And so if Cignetti, who I think regardless of age, we should take a very serious look at, like Edgar had said the other night, you know, who cares that he's 65? If he coaches 7 years and those 7 years are great, then it was all worth it. But I hope that, you know, I think the ball is in their court now. Obviously they can, you know, start really, you know, obviously there's all this back channeling that goes on and things like that. But once a coach is fired, then you really have agents talking and that sort of thing. And so hopefully that they've made up their mind and they kind of have a direct pipeline to Matt Rhule, who's from State College, went to Penn State, and it, you know, they stay away from our boy, Kurt Cignetti, because I would like Cignetti in orange and blue if it's not Lane Kiffin. But as far as timeline goes, I don't think it affects it. I feel like, you know, it's actually kind of perfect. Scott Strickland kind of mirrors Billy's process, where Billy's process is just the process. And Scott's timeline is like the timeline doesn't matter. It's all on him. And so I expect that if Billy loses to Georgia, then he will get fired. But you know, this guy, he keeps pulling a rabbit out of his butt every single time his back's against the wall. And so if he beats Mississippi State and he gets, you know, the best bye week of all time, like the last three bye weeks or whatever, he might just beat Georgia. And if he beats Georgia, then you're giving him an opportunity to save his job, even though he clearly doesn't deserve to be the head coach of the University of Florida. So timeline doesn't change, but it makes me worried that we're going to sit on our hands too long and he's going to accidentally save his job. And people that we are going to compete with in the playoffs, presumably at some point, in our lifetime, are, you know, making moves that need to be made to try to go win football games and win championships.
Yeah, well, going back, I forgot a segment, and so we'll play Drew from Fort Myers, but like me, I think one of our staff members forgot a specific tweet this week following our loss. So we'll play Drew from Fort Myers.
This is Drew from Fort Myers calling back in. I just want to say that Steve Russell, Scott Strickland, and Billy Napier should be ashamed of themselves for the torture that they have put this fan base through. And I hope that the GM, LaFrance, has a really good tweet cooked up to put on the timeline for Sunbelt Billy and the boys this coming Monday. Go Gators.
Yeah, anybody scrolling the timeline after Saturday night's loss and Sunday morning, you fell asleep.
I didn't see any tweets.
Things have gotten so bad that Billy's got Steve Russell catching strays.
Steve Russell, dude.
Yeah.
He needs to post the, if he hears this, the
maybe meme. Maybe it's good that, Jacob of France hasn't been on the timeline. Maybe they've been getting ready for Mississippi State.
Maybe. 10-point favorites. Somehow the Florida Gators are 10-point favorites over an FBS team.
Oh, it's very simple. We are a top-10 team playing at home, and Mississippi State is not a top-10 team and coming to the Swamp. They still might win the game. Who knows? But, you know, I mean, the devil – if what will really be interesting is if Billy gets fired and we – I don't know who would promote as the interim, but it'd be interesting to see what the Vegas Lions do. Like I would love – it'd be very funny if, like, we were actually 13.5 against Mississippi State without Billy on the sidelines.
The line in the Georgia game is going to be, like, 6.5. Like,
yeah, and Kirby's going to try to kill him.
Yeah.
And always bet, you know, it's all, in all kinds of weather, unless it's profitable. So if we are staying by that line, we should all bet on the dogs because they should beat us by.
That might be a very profitable one.
Yes.
I made my skin crawl hearing that.
Yeah.
One other thing about what we should have done last year, but now here we are a year later talking about the same thing. Last year, the teams that we would have been in the hiring market alongside would have been teams like North Carolina, West Virginia, Purdue, Stanford, Wake Forest, and UCF. This year, we are looking at the likes of Penn State, UCLA, Arkansas. I think that Florida's a better job than UCLA and Arkansas. But the teams that could come open, you're looking at Auburn. You're looking at Florida State. You're looking at Oklahoma if they – you know, we've seen it takes 3 weeks for things to go off the rails now. I think Oklahoma is a program that, you know, was number 6 in the country last week. You lose the Red River shootout, and then now you got a couple of conference games coming up. That could go off the rails fast. Wisconsin could come open. Kentucky, another job that, you know, those aren't Florida, but more, you know, hands in this basket going around of big-time SEC, Big Ten programs that are looking for new coaches this offseason. It's just silly. It's silly that we're doing this year. We should have done it last year. We criticize the administration too. And let me just say, this administration is not perfect. They have all their flaws, but it's an administration that's good enough to have a defending national champion basketball program. So I don't want criticisms of the administration to be anything that excuses what's going on in the football building, because that if you hire the right staff, it's going to be 3 to 5 years and Florida's right back where they belong.
Yeah. Not to mention all the money that has been dumped into Florida football. I mean, Billy Napier has literally, he came here with like a wish list and got every single box checked off. And so, you know, people on the timeline complaining that, oh, the administration, this, the administration, that, it is no longer 2015, 2016. You know, you got to skip forward to 2025. The problem are the X's and O's, not the Jimmys and the Joes. And it certainly isn't, you know, the Scots of the world upstairs, as much as we do want him to fire. I think, you know, he's done a good job bringing in money, and the NIL is, you know, probably up there with, I mean, look at the recruiting classes. Our recruiting classes have been pretty good despite Billy's record. And so I think our NIL money is in a good spot. Obviously the stadium renovations, and the money coming through for that and the TV money and everything. I don't buy for a second that the administration is preventing people from wanting this job, especially now with all the turnover we've had with Chip Howard and Linda Teeler and some of the holdovers from the prior administration that maybe were a little more risk averse, shall we say.
The problem with them has been that they hired the wrong coach. It's not that they haven't given them the resources to be successful.
Exactly.
Dev, you mentioned Florida State potentially an opening. As much as our life sucks watching the Gators on Saturday, a hate watch watching the Noles every time they got to play an ACC opponent has certainly been a joy of my Saturdays. It's now 8 straight ACC losses for the Noles. Hunter, we saw Norvell, his name mentioned in that Florida, the Alabama job. He gets a huge extension. Boy, I think they're in a much worse spot than the Gators right now.
Yeah, they're in a tough spot. I will say, though, you see a lot of the times, and I was texting about this today when the Franklin news broke. I think it was around $50 million that Franklin's getting in his buyout. I'm not sure if anyone has Norvell's number up, but it's north of that. And so you see a lot of
I think people, it was $55 million.
Right, and so you see a lot of people immediately go to, oh, well, they're not going to be able to afford to buy out Norvell for 3 or 4 years, whatever it is. I've always personally said, if you're talking about the buyout money and you're talking about it being too much in this era where they've been able to raise so much for NIL, it's usually it ends up not being as much of a problem as it is. It's not my money, right? It's easier to say. It's obviously a lot of money. If they want to come up with it, they'll come up with it. So I agree with Dev, and then that's an opening we could see by the end of the year. I guess it depends on how badly it gets off the rails. But I would agree with you, Jackson, as far as to their position compared to ours. That is if we do part with Billy Napier or he makes a miraculous run like Will still predicts. So we'll see.
And then you're dealing with the battle between Florida and Florida State trying to land Lane Kiffin.
At least we'll get to rub it in their noses when we beat them out for that. I also would like to point out that it was my hot take that Norvell would be fired by the end of the year. I just also, you know, had a other prediction that went off the rails. But I have one last topic if you guys want to close with this question for the floor. This question was asked to me by my good buddy Ryan Lynch that I thought was a fantastic thought exercise for Florida fans. So Florida does not hire a sexy name. So no Lane, no Cignetti, no Marcus Freeman. Who are your top five unsexy hires? Jackson, you can go first.
I don't know if I can give you top five, but I guess Alex Golish, watching them snap the ball every 11 seconds certainly makes me feel some type of way. Got to see them Friday night against North Texas. Slow start, obviously. Can win in the swamp. He has proven it. you know, I saw, you know, Will Stein's been a name that's floated around. Eli Drinkwitz is a name. He was real competitive against Alabama in a 3-point loss. I don't even know. I don't even want to think about that alternate reality of even occurring in Gainesville at this moment in time.
Hunter, so
we're
you
all
got?
Aboard the Lane train. It's Lane Sam? Train. Yeah.
Kenny Dillingham's right down the road from Sam. I can try to put in a word. I was hanging out with a lot of ASU fans yesterday, good friends of mine, and they are just – they swear that he will never leave. And, like, it's like, man, you guys have really only been watching this stuff for a few years, because when the big boys come calling, sometimes your allegiances and your alumni, wherever you went to school, doesn't really matter if the big boys at the Big Ten or the SEC are calling. So I would say Kenny of your – outside of the top three that Will named, obviously Drinkwitz can be there. But Kenny Dillingham for me would be the guy. And I think he will get some attraction from possibly Penn State and even Arkansas.
I'll go next. So non-sexy hire name that I'd look at. Red Lashley is one I would look at. He'd be on that list of the Steve Jackson space there. We're going non-sexy. It's going to be a non-sexy.
Yeah.
That's his name. Brian Hartline would be an interesting one. I know we've talked about that as well. That one's a little riskier since there's no head coaching experience there. But you know you're going to get the offensive prowess. You know he's going to bring an awesome staff in. So that would be an interesting one. Will Stein's one I had on that list as well. I've heard Ryan Silverstein over at Memphis's name. Brent Key, Georgia Tech. I guess that'd round out the top five of the non-sexy names. I'd prefer we don't get there and that these names are never talked about and we stick to the three that we discussed, which is Lane Kiffin, Kurt Cignetti, Marcus Freeman. Let's stay on point, guys. But that's a good question. That was a good thought exercise.
You guys are all ball knowers, and I respect you all immensely. The best hire amongst this group that we're talking about right now is James Franklin, and it's not even close. That's the God's honest truth.
Please,
if you could tell me that I could have James Franklin or I could have Eli Drinkwitz, you're going to look at me in the face and tell me you'd rather have Eli Drinkwitz.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, because I've heard
multiple time Big Ten champion.
Yeah, but there are rumors about getting him out of town before his three straight losses, and it doesn't have to deal It's not comparable to what that Penn State writer said that Adidas forced him out and that new deal. He is apparently very, very hard to work with, and they've been looking for an opportunity to get him out of town.
Games. So, I don't care about that. We don't care about win football games.
I would really rather have Drinkwitz, who's a he's an offensive type guy. James Franklin is like he's basically Billy Napier, Will Muschamp. Why would we do that again?
Devin, if you just disagree, I don't think he's Billy Napier at all. I think that he's a guy that if Billy Napier dreams of having the kind of success. We had the stat earlier. He'd have to go 83-22 to match what James Franklin did over 12 years at Penn State. I'm not saying I want James Franklin. I'm saying if we're scraping the barrel for, outside of these top three or four, like I still would take Lincoln Riley over any of these, non-sexy names that we're talking about.
I would take Bobby Petrino. He's the same age as Kurt Cinetti, and he's looking to revive his career. A proven winner in the SEC. He got the intern job right now at Arkansas.
I'm saying that the shine is off James Franklin because of three bad weeks, and I get it. It was three really, really bad weeks, and he's just lost his job because of it. But if we're talking like, do you want to hire Brian Hartline, or do you want to hire John Summerall, or you want to hire Kenny Dillingham, or do you want to hire the guy that's been to a Final Four game last year and that brings a really good staff with him and can recruit, and it doesn't change that he gets you in big games. Eventually he's going to win one of them. Well, I guess he's not eventually going to win one of them now, but I don't think it's particularly close. I think that James Franklin is a instantly credible hire that's going to recruit good in the state of Florida. And I think if you miss on the elite potential hires, that he's a guy that we can lie about. I'll put it that way.
We would have to, because we'd have to be telling everybody that he's not just the same guy that he was at Penn State.
Devin, the guy at Penn State that won multiple conference championships. We haven't won one in 17 years, guys.
That is technically correct. You are right, but I think you guys are missing the number one unsexy name. It's Jed Fish. Come on, coming back to save the Gators. I mean, think about when Pat McAfee and Kirk Herbstreit are doing the interview when we have game day the first time, and they're talking about the note he put on Spurrier's window. It's going to be all-time scenes.
Yeah, I watched Jed Fish Friday night. I believe they had a Rutgers, got off to a slow start, ended up winning by, I believe, 3 scores. Yeah, I certainly like the Jed Fish offense and his I don't know where he got this quarterback from, if you brought him with him, recruited him out of the portal or out of high school, but he's dynamic. So I'd like something like that in Gainesville.
Something to monitor. Something to monitor.
That's enough.
Something to monitor. He goes at Michigan, and then I think he has Illinois, and there's a path to 10-2 and just missing the playoffs. And if that happens and Billy is eventually, hopefully, fired, he could be our next head coach. But, of course, let's go for the sexy names first. I think I may actually be more on the Sig train than I am the Lane train, even though we've endorsed Lane as a podcast. But Cignetti really turned my head with that win after at Oregon this week.
Yeah, I believe you have to deal with
this weekend.
Say that again.
Do we need to address what happened in Oxford this weekend?
No. They slept through the game just like their students, and they pulled it out, and they are on to Georgia.
Yeah, Lane was on a bye week last week and got to see our fan base show out as a 1-3 team in the Swamp. 90,000 there to cheer on hopefully his new stadium that he'll be coaching in 2026. I don't care. Maybe some of this we saw some tweets on the timeline of why you don't fire or why you fire this time of the year, this whole back channeling. Administration talking to agents and all that good jazz. Maybe he's just negotiating, looking for houses in Hale Plantation right now. So maybe he's just a little bit distracted over there in Oxford.
Could be.
All right. Anything else, fellas, before we wrap it up and reconvene Wednesday night for Breakfast Bites?
Go Gators in all kinds of weather, even when it's pouring rain.
One more day closer, guys.
One more. We are 3 weeks away from Todd Golden and the basketball team starting. We'll start integrating some hoops talk into our pod, and we'll get into it a little bit before tip-off. KenPom came out with a new ranking. You guys see that? Top 25 coaches in America. Todd Golden not on that list, but we will We will get to that when we talk hoops a little bit later. So thank you guys again. Make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share, all that good jazz. And I want to thank our partners again, Stadium and Gale, along with Norris and Norris PA. So thank you, and go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.